You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer. What's going on today, Michael?
Well, what isn't going on? First off the bat, Jawbone. They aren't doing so well.
What's going on with Jawbone? I haven't heard anything from them in a while.
So they kind of made this big announcement, or I don't think it was even an announcement. I think various sources uncovered it. Essentially, they have halted production of their fitness tracker devices, the Jawbone Up 2, 3, etc. They are not making them anymore, and they have moved all of their existing inventory to a third party to sell off.
That's definitely not a good sign.
There is also a story that they are attempting to sell their speaker business to another company.
The Jawbox, what was it called? The
Jambox.
Jambox, right. I don't know how popular that was, but it was kind of a neat design, but they didn't particularly sound that great, so.
Yeah, they weren't amazing. And they've probably taken a hit from Logitech's Ultimate Ear speakers, even Bose and Beats. They all do Bluetooth speakers now. Even Bang & Olufsen, they just released a really decent Bluetooth speaker for similar pricing. So, yeah, they're kind of getting attacked at all sides by competing speakers with better sound quality. And yeah, so they're trying to sell that off. They've stopped making their fitness trackers. Basically, it looks like they're in a tailspin heading for the ground.
And not to say that it's impossible, but at this point, I mean, the wheels have been set in motion. I mean, there's so much competition in this space in the wearable market now. So
yeah, and their reputation has really taken a tumble over the past few years. They've continuously not shipped products on time. When they do, there's a ton of issues with them. People end up returning it. It's no wonder that they've run into the financial trouble that they're obviously in. They just can't seem to make good hardware for whatever reason, and it's bitten them in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought their products were particularly high quality. I wouldn't call them premium quality. You know, they definitely served a purpose, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're all plastic, and they don't look particularly that great.
No.
And when you pit those products next to things like Apple Watch, which I can't help, you know, it doesn't really add up.
No.
Like, and you know what? I really think that the whole market of fitness trackers where they just do that one thing, I don't know how successful that's going to be in the long run.
In the long run, maybe not. Currently, it's quite popular, though. Fitbit has kind of become the de facto leader.
Sure. Does anyone know how that happened? Like, was it just because they ship products on time? Like, what were the circumstances that led them to become sort of the industry leader there?
Well, a few years ago, it was Fitbit and Jawbone. And Jawbone made the Up, and then Fitbit made a whole range of devices depending on your budget and what you were looking for. They've since expanded it over time. But I think it's mainly because Fitbit consistently ships their products on time with a high degree of build quality. Like, these things last forever. And they don't break easily. And they're just a lot better made than the Jawbone products seem to be. Like, there have been various issues over the years with Jawbone. The Up 3 that they just released, it got delayed by 6 or 8 months or something.
That's a long time.
And then when they finally shipped it, there were a number of issues with waterproofing. like they claimed it was water resistant or waterproof, and water was leaking into the hardware on a lot of units. And then before that, one of the previous up bracelets had an issue where people experienced skin irritation. And then I think there was also a skin irritation issue on the one before that. Not to mention various issues with build quality failing. The rubber on some of them would actually come away from the hardware. The glue would become unstuck and the whole thing would just kind of fall apart. The software before the most recent version, incredibly buggy. The syncing wouldn't work properly sometimes. Like,
so it sounds like there's all these different areas where they've failed in, which is...
like, they might have sort of gotten their shit together now, but it's kind of too little too late, because over the past few years, they've just fucked up so many times that people have been driven to their competitors.
Like, that's too bad.
People get a Jawbone device, it screws up on them, and they just go, well, I don't want to deal with this.
Well, of course. Why would you,
and then they get a Fitbit, and the Fitbit's great, and everybody else that they know has a Fitbit. And of course, Fitbit has the whole thing where you can track your friend's steps. So people end up competing to do more exercise than their friends. It's a thing. So there's that element too. Like, if all your friends have one, then you're probably going to get one.
Yeah.
If you're into that.
I've worked at companies before where they have good ideas, but it's the execution that fails, and it fails on multiple levels. And it's sometimes it's because like one team is not collaborating with another team, or multiple teams are not collaborating as closely as they should be. And if it's especially more complex when you are making hardware, because if you're not designing in-house, if you're not working very, very closely with a hardware partner, especially a hardware partner that is overseas, which makes things more difficult. There's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah, especially if you're not keeping an eye on quality control. Like,
well, how, actually, speaking of quality control, I mean, how has Pebble been doing? Because they outsourced their stuff, and they did have some challenges,
they
too.
They did initially, but from what I know, it's pretty solid now. The Pebble Time and the Pebble Time Round and the Pebble Time Steel, those are all really solid products. And
right, right.
Now, of course, they're working on shipping the next iteration of their products, the Pebble Time 2 and the Pebble 2 and the Pebble Core, which just launched on Kickstarter yet again.
Are they still doing the sort of entry level? They always seem to kind of be targeting, like they always try to set themselves apart from Apple, that, you know, we're not the premium fashion smartphone watch. We're always going to be the $200 you know, get yourself in the door watch that's more customizable than Apple.
So the Pebble 2 is the next iteration of the very original Pebble that started everything. So the original plastic one.
Okay.
The Pebble 2 is also plastic, but it has a glass screen, which is a huge improvement from the original model. I think the screen is higher res as well. And as with the Pebble Time 2, it has a heart rate tracker on it. They've basically said that moving forward, all of their watches will have heart rate trackers. And from hands-on impressions, it seems like it's about as accurate as the Apple Watch, maybe a little less so, but still quite good. And the Pebble 2, they're targeting, I think, at around $100. So for $100, you're getting something with the same kind of functionality as the Apple Watch for way less money. And it has way more battery life. Like, I think the Pebble Time 2 has 10 days of battery life, and the Pebble 2 has 7 days of battery life. Mm-hmm. So
I'm looking at the Pebble Time Round. Is this currently the newest product?
Yes.
Okay. You think that's going to be a trend, that where everyone's going to switch to round faces for smartwatches?
I don't think so, just based just based on screenshots, actual screenshots that Google has posted for Android Wear on a round screen. It is the most god-awful garbage I have ever seen. Things are getting cut off. Like, the kind of UI they are proudly displaying is something I would never show to anyone. Like, it's just that bad. Luckily, Pebble, they actually seem to have a bit more about them. They're actually trying to use that round screen and properly display content.
Well, it's simple. It looks like it's a lot more simplistic.
Yeah. But then with Android Wear 2, they've got the keyboard and all this other stuff.
A keyboard on a round screen?
Yeah. It's the, like...
No.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't make any sense.
I'll have to find the screenshot. We can post it in the show notes. It is utterly atrocious. I don't know who decided it was a good idea to ship this or even show it to anyone, but it basically shows that Apple has had the right idea the entire time. Square is the way to go. You just can't get that information density on a round screen. And if you try, it's going to get so absurdly cut off that it looks broken.
I really don't get this round face like, thing because I get analog. It works for analog watches because we've had that. But you cannot try to fit a computer into a round screen. It just doesn't work. And it doesn't have to be.
The components you can fit into a round chassis. No, that's not a problem.
I mean...
The content.
I don't mean the actual, of course you can. I'm just saying that, you know, computers have typically been on square, like we've had square screens or rectangular widescreen. Yeah.
And UIs
have been built for that. So why?
That's for a reason. Like, in order to get the highest information density, you want to read left to right, top to bottom. And the best way to do that is with a square or rectangular screen.
Right.
Because then you can fit as much text as possible and have
the
scrolling.
Corners too. In the corners, you get all that information there in the corner.
Exactly. With a round screen, you lose all the corners. Right. So of course, things that would normally show up in the corners, it gets cut off.
Well, to me, this is where I think maybe I don't know if skeuomorphism is the right word to use here, but I just feel like this is trying too hard to be like our old analog counterparts. It's like, no, we need to separate ourselves from that. It's okay to have a square or rectangular screen on a smartwatch.
Yeah.
A smartwatch is not an analog watch. It will never be an analog watch. Stop trying to make it an analog watch.
It's not a watch anymore. It's a wearable information display. Like, it's meant to be pretty. It's meant to be an item of fashion. At least that's how Apple's presenting it.
I think that's part of the problem too. Why they're not, like, regardless of where the shortcomings are, and I think this is going to be a problem for the next couple of years at least, is there's a perception problem from consumers. It's hard to not think of a computer on your wrist as anything but just a fancy watch.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get away from that mindset.
Well, I think this is why Apple is focusing primarily on health and on, well, we'll see what else they focus on at WWDC talking about WatchOS 3. But I think the primary focus for the Apple Watch moving forward is going to be health. It is going to be, you wear this thing and it can tell you things about your body that you might not necessarily know, or things that you need to know at any given time.
Right.
Like,
well, your heart rate.
The more sensors they add to this thing, the more the watch is going to be able to do things like, hey, you should really see a doctor. This looks troubling. Or
I would love that.
You're not getting enough sleep. Your stress levels seem to be really high. You should think about going to bed earlier. Well, things like that. Many,
especially as you get older, you know, when you get in your 40s and 50s, when you're supposed to have a regular yearly checkup at the doctor, just think about how many people don't do those checkups.
Yeah.
And if we had these devices that at the very least, I'm not saying they're a replacement for going to a doctor, but
no.
At the very least, it is better than nothing. And
yeah.
To have that information, that would be super useful. Like, the Apple Watch already is so limited in functionality, but look at all the fantastic testimonials and use cases it's had. Like, it has changed people's lives. I know that for a fact,
like,
personally.
Just the simplistic exercise stuff on it, people have said it's made me think about not sitting down so much.
Right.
It's made me take that extra step. It's made me walk instead of take the bus or...
Well, just look at Jim Dalrymple, famously in the tech Apple blogosphere. I mean, look how much weight he lost by just like doing exactly what the watch tells him to do. Get up when it tells him to get up. Go for a walk when it tells him. And that's all he did.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
he did stop eating hamburgers all the time.
Yeah. That helps.
That does help too. But I'm saying it does make an impact.
It does. And I think they really went about it the right way. The way it kind of pushes you, the way it kind of reminds you. And that can extend to the future health features.
Right.
Like when they finally get non-invasive glucose scanning in there.
That's a big deal.
If you're a diabetic, you can plug that into Apple Health or HealthKit or whatever.
Yeah.
And your iPhone and by extension your watch will know you're a diabetic, and it'll know to warn you if your sugar is getting too high or too low, and it'll take that really seriously.
And last year, HealthKit did receive a bunch of updates, did it not?
It did. Glucose is in there along with a bunch of other stuff. It also has period tracking.
Of course,
you
still need a third-party device to do the reading, but eventually, one day, we'll have sensors in our iPhones and smartwatches.
Like I've said before, Apple has hired the expert on non-invasive glucose sensors, like the foremost expert. So we know they're working on it. The only problem, like, it actually works. The tech works. It exists. The only problem currently, or at least before they hired this person, was that it wasn't quite accurate enough.
Mm. Like, how can you do that with a sensor? That's what I don't get. Don't you actually need a blood sample in order to...
As it turns out, no. It uses a system of infrared pulses to read sugar molecules in the blood or something.
Like, it does magic.
It does some insane thing.
I need to look this up because it sounds like too good to be true. Like, I can't believe we have that technology.
Yeah, like it's like an algorithm paired with like this complicated sensor, and it just figures out what your glucose level is just by looking at your blood or something. It's nuts.
Amazing.
I think what it is glucose gives off a different light than the blood.
Okay.
So it can kind of pick apart that wavelength and be like, okay, based on what I'm seeing, your glucose looks like it's around this much.
Mm.
Something like that. I haven't read the information about that sensor in a while, so I could be off.
Wow.
But yeah, it does something like that. But yeah, it's, I think the accuracy is around 80%. So they hired that guy about a year or 2 years ago. So by now, possibly in the Apple Watch 2, they might have finally gotten it up to 95 or 99.99% to the point where instead of buying one of those stupid little glucose readers, you just get your Apple Watch.
Well, I would imagine as a diabetic, you would want, if you could have that in a smartphone watch, why wouldn't you just, you want to know anywhere, like, you are, you want to know.
Yeah, exactly. And with those readers, you have to actively check your blood sugar.
Yeah.
The watch, with its non-invasive sensor, it'll read your blood sugar constantly. So the minute it starts to fluctuate, your watch will tell you, which is way more valuable. And it'll basically put those glucose readers out of business.
Hmm.
Then you've got Google. They're working on, I think, a glucose reading contact lens, which is a bit weird.
See, that to me is the ultimate, where we get contact lenses with heads-up displays. And I know that's being worked on, but man, that
it's going
to
require
the level of complexity to miniaturize the battery power.
Well, it doesn't, they've actually figured out ways to not need a battery. It gets powered by your tears or something.
Like you're making this up.
No, I'm really not. The salt in your
tear, powered by tears?
Yeah, the salt in your tears, it can do this thing and it can carry an electrical charge from it.
Is this real life?
Yeah. They also have nanobots that can power themselves from your blood. Like just by being in your bloodstream, it can like pick up a slight electrical charge from that.
Nanobots as in the things that were in 7 of 9?
Yeah, sufficiently less advanced though. No assimilation here yet. But yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Well, speaking of crazy, you were saying before we started recording that Apple has pulled their networking products off the shelves. Is that true?
Yes, but only in the States. There was actually an update. I don't think it's actually indicative of anything.
Right. Maybe just a supply issue.
No, it's not. There's actually a new FCC rule about routers.
Okay.
Some kind of certification thing. So they might, I think they might have just pulled them because they need to have new boxes that have like certain information on it. Something like that. Like it's a new regulation. It comes in, it goes into effect June 1st. So that's probably why they're in a hurry. Because I don't think they sell a lot of them, to be honest.
Probably not. I mean, the Time Machine, well, at least the Time Machine stuff is not cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But IoT devices.
Yeah, there is a new rumor out there about Apple creating their version of the Amazon Echo. The latest rumor is actually quite interesting. Not only is it going to have a microphone and a speaker, but it's also going to have a camera that can do facial recognition and recognize people that live in the house.
Wow.
To be able to answer different things.
That would be cool.
Which I think you would need if the other big rumor is true, and that would be Siri 2.0, powered by the company they bought it a year ago, Vocal IQ.
What was Vocal IQ doing?
So they were a company that started out of Cambridge, and they created a conversational AI interface that was drastically more capable of learning context than any AI that's come before. To the point where before they shipped it, I mean, they were going to ship it, but then Apple bought them. They were actually in the middle of finalizing a smartphone app that they would have released on iOS and Android, and then Apple acquired them. But it was at the point where Vocal IQ was able to respond to voice queries with 90% accuracy to Siri and Google Now's 20 to 30%.
Well, when you compare 90% to 20% accuracy, yeah, that's massive. That is game-changing.
And more importantly, the architecture has the capability to permanently learn context.
But where does that data get stored? Like, does it still have to go to Apple's server and, like, I have to wait for a response? Because oftentimes Siri is just, it's slow.
It might, but they hired another company called Perceptio.
Of course they did.
That was working on another technology that allowed the AI to be stored locally on a phone and not have to call home as much.
Maybe we get a specialized, separate chip on the phone. I mean, we've had a motion coprocessor now.
Siri coprocessor.
I mean, you never know.
It's possible.
I don't know, some other secure chip just for storing AI data.
Well, my guess is the Secure Enclave has more storage than we think it does.
Well, yeah, just store it there if you got all that extra space.
What I think they will do is the Siri Cloud will be powered by Vocal IQ and a bunch of other stuff that they've put together from various acquisitions. And on the phone, it will use a Perceptio-powered local AI that pings back to the Siri Cloud for updates. And when it doesn't know something locally, it pings the cloud with your query and returns an answer. which then feeds back in on itself because it learns from that and so on and so forth because of the vocal IQ tech. And any data it learns about you personally, because it will, the thing about this tech is it learns context. So for example, if all of this is in there, you'll be able to go to Siri, hey, show me movies that are whatever. And it gives you a list of movies. And then you go, okay, I like that one. Then you get home, you put on your Apple TV, pick up the Siri remote, open Siri and go, hey, can you show me that movie that I liked earlier?
Yeah, it remembers the last
Bam.
Query, right?
No, it doesn't remember the last query. It remembers every query.
Oh, okay.
Everything you've ever told it.
Well, then how does it know what to put on there?
Because of the architecture.
Hmm.
Like, the more input you give it, the more it learns, the more it remembers, the more it recognizes. And more generically, all of the vocal input going into the Siri cloud from every person with an iOS device helps the overall system architecture learn. And then locally,
I'm frightened by this AI.
And then locally, it's learning things about you. So here's where I think the privacy issue comes in. When it comes to data that's personally identifiable, things like I like pizza, or I like that particular thing, or I have a boyfriend, I have a girlfriend, like things like that. When it comes to information like that about you, that you wouldn't necessarily want everybody to know.
Right.
That data will be stored on iCloud, but it'll be encrypted with a key that gets stored on the secure enclave.
That makes sense.
So then, like iMessage, only a device that you're logged into with your Apple ID can decrypt that data. Otherwise, you only have access to the generic Siri cloud that doesn't know things about you.
Hey Siri, can you show me that butt plug that I was looking up on Amazon earlier?
Yeah, well, I mean,
it could be anything.
We joke, but yeah, it could be stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's all encrypted.
This AI sounds incredibly intelligent, almost too intelligent.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave.
I mean, based on what I've read about this tech, it could be really groundbreaking. Like, and couple that with the rumored Siri API, and then
right,
suddenly
yeah.
this ridiculously intelligent system can then
oh, it'll be amazing
connect.
If it's true. If it does happen.
Yeah.
Which I have a feeling it will.
It's looking increasingly likely that
but
this
I'm
is
curious,
the year.
Though, why... What's wrong with Apple that they couldn't have made this themselves? Why can't they make something that good? Why do they have to constantly buy these other companies?
Well, I think it's just a matter of talent. Like, they have people that do stuff, of course. But if they see other people that are working on something similar that they think can dramatically improve yeah. what they're working on, they're going to go for that.
Sure.
Like any company, if they see somebody really smart doing something really cool, they go, hey, do you want to work with us on this stuff?
Yeah.
I think if we work together, we can make something even more awesome. So, I mean, it just kind of goes like that. Just like with the glucose sensor. Apple knows that they want to do more health things. They know that they want to put more sensors into the watch. So they hire people that have the skills and the know-how to be able to allow them to do that. So it's the same thing with this. They just look for talent. They look for exciting new developments. And they go, okay, can we strategically acquire this and use it to make what we're doing better? And then they go do that. So, I mean, like, on a long enough timescale, sure, the existing developers at Apple could probably do whatever. But if they see promising new talent that can help them get there faster, they're going to do that.
Makes sense.
And every company does that. So, I mean, Apple certainly isn't an exception to that. Yeah. So,
well, it's a wait and see, I guess. And, you know, there's not too much to say. I mean, we could, you know, sit here for the next few weeks and talk about what may or may not show up at WWDC, but I think that'll be slightly boring because I think everyone knows at this point, based on the amount of rumors that have been flying around, you know, that old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. This is going to be a pretty big one.
Yeah. I've gotten that sense. Like, we are slightly less than 2 weeks away and we know practically nothing. All we know is that there's probably going to be a big Siri improvement. We're going to get a redesign of Apple Music. And that's about it. That's literally all we know. And probably Phil Schiller is going to announce a ton of improvements to the App Store.
Well, that
much
room will
needed
be full,
improvements.
That room will be full of developers. So, they better.
Yeah. I have a feeling this year is going to be big because, iOS 9 was all about fixing the ecosystem. So now it's like, okay.
What do you mean fixing the ecosystem?
Well, making it more stable. Like
right,
iOS 8 was just really buggy and
awful.
Unstable. So iOS 9 was about kind of righting the ship. And now it's like, okay, now it's time to really move.
But I think especially after, I think it was around, I want to say iOS 9.1, it started to get pretty stable.
Yeah.
Like I don't have a lot of I just remember iOS 8 springboard crashes. Like,
oh, I know.
Every week it would happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that. It was bad.
You know, the spontaneous, I guess when springboard crashes, that's when you get the white boot screen with the Apple logo, and then a couple seconds later, everything reloads.
Yeah, I got a few of those in iOS 8. Yeah, so I think we've kind of had that stability, and now it's time to really just...
Yeah, and they've been doing pretty good with the updates, too, because they've been doing a lot more of these. Well, now they have the public beta program. They're collecting...
Yeah.
They're supposedly collecting a lot more data and feedback now that you don't have to pay to get developer access to test these. That they're like even Craig Federighi said on the talk show, you know, was it last year, 6 months ago, or whenever he was on, he was saying how now he even has his family and all of their iOS devices are on the betas and they're getting feedback from people that are using it so close to them.
I mean,
right? So that's a good thing.
That's really the best way to get proper feedback. Like, unless regular people are using this stuff, you're not going to know. Like, developers, they're not necessarily going to go to all the trouble of like just using it like crazy and doing all these things. Their developers probably just put the beta on a phone that they use to test their app against, and that's about it. Like,
but you have to use it. Has to be, the phone has to be used like you would any other phone, like day, doing every possible thing you would normally do on it.
And I mean, before the public betas, because I'm crazy, I always put the beta on my primary phone.
Sure. Yeah, no, I've done that too. I had iOS 9.3 beta on here for a while.
Because I trust that Apple betas are not going to blow up my phone.
Sure.
So, and I mean, that's worked out for me so far. Except for that time where they totally fucked up the cellular and I had to, I think I had to force downgrade it because completely fucked up the cellular.
The only issues that I've seen, which are to be expected, is that sometimes you may have the odd app or two that might crash more frequently.
Yeah.
On a beta, right? Maybe there's some weird API minor thing that changes and then some app just doesn't behave properly. But for the most part, I think well-designed iOS apps that follow, that use Apple's APIs properly, in theory, should be working just as well as they would on a public gold master release or whatever you want to call it. Like, they should, in theory, work, right?
Yeah. Unless there have been breaking changes.
Unless they're breaking changes.
In which case, developers have to upgrade their apps to support it. But that's always done at WWDC for the next version of iOS. They go, okay, moving forward, we're deprecating this API. This is changing to this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I think we're getting another release, another stable release before WWDC, because I think 9.3.3 or something like that is in public beta.
Yeah.
Which I haven't installed yet.
Yeah.
I think it's a minor release.
Like yeah, we're on beta one, I think.
I actually don't like how I never see like a full list of all the bugs. I really want to see a full list of what's being fixed.
Yeah, they're kind of bad about that. I wish they'd be a little more transparent about that stuff.
Yeah.
They usually post full notes about security fixes.
Security fixes, yeah.
But the actual bug fixes. It would be nice to see like which radars they closed with each release and so on.
Is that something you only have access to if you're in the paid developer program, or do you not even get access to the actual full change log per iOS release with everything that they've closed?
It depends.
Because it seems like maybe they pick and choose what they want to show you.
They do. For every major release of iOS, there are full changelog notes about here's this new feature we've added, here are all the APIs, here are all the APIs we've changed, here are all the APIs we're getting rid of. Like they have full information about all that stuff.
Oh, there we go. 9.3.3, public beta 1, available now.
There you go.
I forgot my phone's still tied to the beta.
Yeah. I'm not sure how many betas of that there'll be before we get to WWDC. They might ship 9.3.3 at WWDC. I'm not sure. But then, of course, there'll be the iOS 10 developer preview and the public beta. So people will move on to that. We probably won't get many more iOS 9 releases. We might get to 9.3.4 or 9.3.5 by September, maybe.
And for OS 10 point, I guess 12 would be the next major release that we're going to get. You think we'll get an iMessage app that will sync iMessages between devices? I absolutely hate when I do a reinstall and I lose all my message history.
Well,
I know we've talked about this, but come on, please find a secure way of doing it. There has to be. I refuse to believe there isn't a secure way to get that data.
Well, I mean, that's what makes it difficult because it's like, well, everything's encrypted per device and it has the key and everything. Like it makes it difficult, but... Yeah, I guess it's not impossible. I'm sure they have somebody looking at it. I think iOS 10 will probably see even more encryption, to be honest, because of the whole FBI thing. Like, I think...
Yo, dog, I heard you like encryption. Put some encryption in your encryption.
Like, for example, iCloud backups aren't encrypted. If you upload a backup of your phone to iCloud, it's not encrypted. So
that's news to me.
So I think
thought it was encrypted.
Yeah, no, it's not. So I think that'll be changing for starters.
That definitely will be changing.
Yeah, that'll definitely be changed. I think we'll see a number of security improvements throughout. They might even do like a panic thing where with Touch ID, if you use a finger that's not registered, it triggers a silent alarm or something.
When your phone blows up?
No, like...
They already have the, enter your passcode 10 times incorrectly and then it just erases it.
Yeah, but then it's like, there is a case where somebody might try to force you to unlock your phone. So if you unlock it with the wrong finger, they could maybe add a feature where it erases it.
That makes sense.
You just have to remember not to use that finger ever.
Well, what would be better if it was somebody else's finger and it knew that it was clearly not your finger?
I think that applies to the existing 10 tries feature I'm pretty sure. Although with Touch ID, I think it's like after a few tries, it then forces you to enter the passcode. Like it disables Touch ID and it makes you enter the passcode because it's like, okay, somebody tried to get in and they weren't you.
The Touch ID of the future should be also tied to your DNA because then nobody could ever copy that. Unless they cloned you.
However, there is a slippery slope there. Courts have ruled that if a cop asks you to unlock a phone that's locked with biometrics, you have to do it because it's not the same as a password. A password is in your head. Therefore, if you give the password, you are speaking, which means you are incriminating yourself. Whereas a fingerprint is something that can be easily obtained with a court order, just like a blood sample for DNA, that sort of thing. So if something is only biometrically locked, they can legally force you to divulge it because it's not the same as a secret that's in your head.
That's an interesting workaround.
Yeah, it's an interesting legal argument. I don't agree with that.
No, I don't agree with it either.
But that is the legal ruling as it stands, at least in the U.S. Obviously, I don't think the final word has been written on that. But yeah, currently that's what the precedent is in the States. So that's kind of a problem. Other security advocates have also had think pieces about this, and they've said that biometrics aren't really a password. They're more of a username. So to use them as a password is a bit odd. And I mean, that I agree with too. Like, you can't change your fingerprints.
Sure.
If somebody gets your fingerprint, they're always going to be able to unlock your phone no matter what. Whereas if you change your password, only you know your password. So really, biometrics ought to be a way of identifying someone.
Right, but it's more of a two-factor authentication thing because you can't have, for example, Touch ID and no passcode.
Yes.
You have to have a passcode plus Touch ID.
You do, but again, if somebody has your fingerprint, they can just unlock your phone and then they can do anything they want. Eventually, it'll ask you for a password, but not before the damage is done.
Yeah, but lifting somebody's fingerprints, it's easier said than done, right? Because I thought, wasn't there a news piece a couple of years ago
about
you need a super high resolution scanner? Like,
you actually don't, no. This German hacker team actually lifted a print off of some notable figure from like a photo of their hand or something. Like this just ridiculous thing. And then they were able to successfully unlock the phone.
Wow. So it's not as secure as we think.
Yeah. It's really not as secure as we think. Biometrics should be, this is who I am. It shouldn't be unlock my stuff, please.
Well, like again, we'll never see just biometrics and no PIN code or multi-character passphrase behind it. That's why Apple asks for both of those things because they know it's not that secure.
Yeah. It's
a convenience thing. Yeah. It's like, yes, it's convenient to use my fingerprint so that I don't have to enter a password to buy an app.
Yeah.
But it's not the it's not like a panacea to all security.
No.
Like password issues. Like, yes, it's, and having that in addition to a bad password, like 1234. Yes, that is better than just having a password of 1234.
Yeah. I'll just add that I think it's an issue that's going to come up, and obviously it's something Apple's probably looking at. I think we'll see more on this in the future as they try to make iOS more secure.
Definitely, and it's exciting times. I can't wait to see what they unveil at WWDC, which is, what is the date for that again?
June 13th.
June
at 13th. 10 a.m.
Okay, so that's not too far away. We're almost at the end of May.
Yep. It's June 1st next week.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks. You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight with Michael Norton as always. If you'd like to show your support for this show and the network at large, please head over to patreon.com/hologramradio. That is the single best way to support what we do here because we like to make high quality shows for all of you guys. So donate a buck or two or whatever you feel comfortable with. It will help us out immensely. And once we get to a certain level of our Patreon, we're going to be doing a t-shirt giveaway and a few other things. So please do that now. You can also head over to hologramradio.org/sponsors. Please, please, if you're going to shop at Amazon, which I know many of you do, please take a moment and use our affiliate links. All you need to do is click on the link and shop exactly how you were going to shop before. No additional work needed on your part. We've got links for Amazon UK, USA, and Canada, which should cover most of you listening to this show. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And if you are in iTunes, please take a moment to leave us a rating. I know it's annoying. We ask you every week. But if you're not going to do anything else, please leave us a rating. It would help us out. You can follow the show. We're on Twitter at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm Alex Knight at Zero Distraction. We're also on Facebook. Just do a search for Hologram Radio, Instagram, Hologram Radio Shows. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, please do. You can send us feedback to our email address, which is theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.